The truth is, Friday night when I was here, we spoke a little bit about some of these things, but this is a whole different idea, and hopefully we'll elaborate and get some more depth on this topic. Right now, we are post-Pesach. Since we are post-Pesach, that means that we've done all the mitzvahs of Pesach, except there's one mitzvah from Pesach that we're still doing, and that is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Now, by the way, girls doing Sfiras HaOmer is not that simple, right? Because actually the custom used to be that women did not do it. First of all, women don't have to do it, right? Because Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah sasei shehazman grama, which means it's a time-bound mitzvah, which means that women have the option to do it, but they don't actually have to do it. Now, the Mishubura says that the custom in his times, I don't know if it's his times, maybe a little before him, was that women did not do the mitzvah. And the Mishubura says something very weird. You know why he says women did not do the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? He says two reasons. One is because, anyways, they're not going to finish all 49 days, which is not true today because you all get alerted on your phone, right? But the second reason he says is because women did not understand the meaning of the words of Sfiras HaOmer, and therefore there's actually no point in doing it. Now think about what that means. It means that 100 years ago, women did not know what the following words mean. Hayom esrim yom la'omer. That's all you need to understand. What does that mean? Today's the 20th day of Omer. Women did not used to know what that means. So you're all very lucky that society has progressed and you get to come to seminary and learn what Hayom esrim yom la'omer means. So you guys also do the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer. Now why do we count the Omer? Where is that from? So the truth is it's in the Torah. But what the Torah says about counting the Omer is no longer applicable. And I'll explain why. Back in the day when we had a temple, what happened was is that the second day of Pesach, they would go out into the field, they would harvest a little bit of barley. That barley was offered in the Beis HaMikdash as some kind of a flour offering. And they would count from the barley offering all the way till Shavuos when they would bring a wheat offering. Now today we no longer have the Beis HaMikdash, which means that we don't have the barley offering and we don't have the wheat offering. Because that's the case, today the counting actually no longer applicable. So the rabbis actually said, we count today because of rabbinic enactment, rabbinic decree. It's all midrabbanon. Now we count midrabbanon, why? Why do the rabbis want us to count? So there's a few reasons given in the Rishonim. The first one I'd like to cite for you is someone by the name of the Ran, who was one of the Rishonim. He says the following. He says, when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Mitzrayim to tell the Jewish people that he was going to take them out, he told them, I'm taking you out of Egypt. So they said, well, where are we going? So he told them, you know where we're going? We are going to the mountain. Which mountain? The mountain of worship. Tabdun eswa likim alahor azeh. I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim, and we're going to go to Har Sinai, and we're going to accept the Torah. And they asked him, oh, really? When is that? He said, in 50 days from right now, you're going to be at Har Sinai receiving the Torah. They were so excited to receive the Torah, they started counting it down. Like when you have some exciting life event, like going home at the end of the year, so you have a calendar in your room, and every day in the calendar you take a big red marker and you big X over that day. So the same thing with Kabbalah Satorah. That's a little bit of a bad muscle, but by Kabbalah Satorah, Klal Yisrael was counting down the days in order to receive the Torah in anticipation. And the Rana actually says, he uses the words that they were days of Simcha Satorah, tremendous joy and anticipation for receiving the Torah. This is why we count the Omer. Now, when I tell you that the days of Sfiras HaOmer are days of tremendous joy and anticipation, it's a little interesting because we know that Sfiras HaOmer can also be a bit of a downer, and it could be a bit of a bummer. Why is that? Well, first of all, it's a very, very important, I think probably the most, for guys a little bit different, because guys can't shave and take haircuts. I don't know how often you guys really do that anyways, but when it comes to music is super annoying, right? Music is a big part of our life. Makes everybody happy. And because of that, Chazal said during this time is also a time of mourning and a time of sadness. And because of that, there's really three general takanas that we don't do. Number one, we don't like dance and that kind of stuff. No chasidus, no getting married. And also, as far as the haircuts and shaving, those things are also not allowed during the Tekufa of Sfiras HaOmer. Now, why is this a period of mourning? Why did this become a time of sadness? So the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos says the following. The famous Gemara, I'm sure you've heard it, that the Rebbe Kiva, the great Rebbe Kiva, had 24,000 Talmidim. The Gemara actually says, very interesting, 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, 12,000 sets. They had Chavrusas, 12,000 sets of Chavrusas, and they all died. Now the Gemara says they died between Pesach and Atzeres. Atzeres is the Gemara's word for Shavuos. The Torah also actually calls it Shavuos. So Rebbe Kiva had 24,000 Talmidim that died, and because that is such a sad event, therefore we mourn between Pesach and Shavuos. So this time, which really was supposed to be a great anticipation and joy, it was marred by the tragic, untimely passing of 24,000 tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. So the question is, how do we really reconcile these two feelings? I mean, at the same time, this tkufa, this season, is a season of, wow, the Torah is coming. And then on the other hand, well, it's sadness. So is it joy? Is it sadness? And really, the real question I want to ask is, why did the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva die specifically between Pesach and Shavuos? Like, they could have died any time if for some reason there was a special claim against them during this period of Sfiras HaOmer that they died. So I'd like to know why that is. That is the first question they're going to be addressing today. There is, by the way, one day during Sfiras HaOmer, there is no mourning and there's no sadness. Which day is that? Lag BaOmer. Are you guys going to Meiron and Lag BaOmer?
Not allowed to.
Not allowed to. You're going to be in America. Okay, you're going to go. Do you know how many people come from America? Do you know how many people come from America for Lag BaOmer? Thousands and thousands of people fly here just to go to the Reb Shimon Bar Yochai's Kever on Meiron. I have to be honest with you, last year was the first time that I went. It was nice. I had a good hookup, so that's why I went. But brought my kids. It was very, very nice. But I understand why you're not allowed to go there, because there's a lot of other stuff going on there. Crazy people are always attracted to this stuff. Gets wild there, but a lot of pushing and shoving also. I don't know if you guys are into that. So the one day when there actually is no sadness and no mourning is Lag BaOmer. Why is there no sadness and mourning in Lag BaOmer? So like the haircuts is allowed, music is allowed, weddings are allowed, all the things that we don't do the rest of Sfiras HaOmer, we are allowed to do on Lag BaOmer. Why? So the Mefarshim say very simply, on the one hand, the students of Rabbi Akiva did not die on Lag BaOmer. That's when the whole thing stopped. Right? First of all, you know the whole first half, second half thing? So you need to have 32, 33 days of Avelos. So some say that they died from Pesach. When it says Atzeres, they didn't really die until Atzeres, until Shavuos. They died until Lag BaOmer. So on Lag BaOmer, everything was done. Which is why. What's special about Lag BaOmer that the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying? And do you know what else happened in Lag BaOmer? Lag BaOmer is also the yard site of... Well, go to Meiron, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's the yard site of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. What book did Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai write that he's so famous for? Not Harry Potter. He wrote a book called the Zohar. Okay? You're not supposed to know that.
Actually,
I made you feel bad by waiting so long.
No, we're supposed to know that.
I don't think you're supposed to know that. I think it's like super extra credit if you know that. Zohar is like Kabbalah. Like, I'm not even supposed to know that. But I looked it up.
Okay, well.
So the Zohar is a very, very holy book of Kabbalah. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai wrote it. His yard site was on Lag BaOmer, and that day he revealed all the secrets of the Zohar. So again, I just have another... These aren't really questions. I'm just pointing out, I'm just observing the fact that Rabbi Akiva's students died during Sfiras HaOmer, and that the one day when they didn't die is also the yard site of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And I just want to throw one more thing here. There, Chassam Sofer writes somewhere that Lag BaOmer is also the day when the Mun first fell for Klal Yisrael. They went in the desert, they had no food, and therefore Hashem gave them this special Lechem in Hashemayim, the Mun. So what I want to figure out is, well, how do all these things mix together? How do they correlate with each other? What is the connection between all these events? Why during this time period we have all these things, okay? Now, I want to state a disclaimer before I get into the idea that I really want to talk about today, and that is the following. This shir is a non-gender sensitive shir, which means that even though it may sound a few times if I'm about to say that I am talking about tznius and how you dress, I am not talking about that at all. This is not about how you dress. This is about general ideas of self-respect. This shir, in fact, was written for men. Okay, so please do not like think anything that I said was about this or that. You have plenty of teachers here that teach you about tznius, or you probably grew up hearing about it. You probably know all you need to know. This is not about tznius. Okay, is that clear? This is nothing to do with tznius. Okay, ready? I'm going to tell you a pasuk that you maybe say every day, and I want you to tell me what it means. Leman yizamercha kavod velo yidom. Okay, this is in Pesukei Zimra. Actually, it's right before Baruch Sha'amar. We say Mizmor Shir. Chanukah Sabayis to David, and at the end, David HaMelech says the following: Leman Yizamercha Kavoid V'lo Yidayim. I would like, right? Leman is an order. Yizamercha, that it should praise you, Kavoid. That Kavoid should praise you, V'lo Yidayim, and it should not be silent. Okay, this is a pasuk that we say every day if we wake up on time to say it. Now, Leman Yizamercha Kavoid. Kavoid is not a person, right? Kavod is it's like an idea. It's not really a subject. How could honor praise Hashem? David HaMelech is calling Something he says, in order that my honor should praise you. So some of Horsham say that it means honorable ones. But that's not what most of them, unfortunately, say. They say the following. L'man yizamercha kavod, in order that my kavod should praise you. Kavod means my soul. David HaMelech calls his soul kavod. Now what does the word kavod mean? Kavod means, give me some synonyms for kavod, some translation synonyms.
Honor,
respect, my favorite one is dignity. Okay? These all mean kavod. So David HaMelech says, I want my honor, my dignity, my self-respect to praise you, Hashem. And in other places he does this as well. He says the words, Ura chvodi ura. I would like my honor to be awakened. He's not referring to his honor. He's referring to his soul. Now if you look on the source sheet over here, there's a sefer called Mitzudas Tzion. He really is a summary of most of the Rishonim and the Radak. The Mitzudas Tzion says, what is kavod? He says these words, He ha-neshama. Kavod is the neshama, shehi kavod haguf. Now let's just review here for a second. Every person is made up of two parts. Those two, we've been through this numerous times. Every person's two parts are, number one, his body, and number two, his soul. Body and soul. What is the body? The body is material. It's physical. It really serves as a vessel, a receptacle, because a soul, if it doesn't have anything to hold it, where does it go? It's not really here. It needs to be connected to something in order to be in this world, which is also a material world. So therefore, Hashem gave us a guf, which is material, to hold our souls. Now, there are two concepts which are, they're opposites of each other. They are the concepts of kavod and, what's the opposite of kavod? What's the opposite of honor? That wasn't fair. You can't use dishonor as the opposite of honor. What's going to be a good word for the opposite of honor and dignity? Busha. What's busha in English? Busha is shame. Okay? Now every person has honor and shame. Now when I talk about honor here and dignity, I'm not talking about the bad kind of honor, like people who are like looking for kavod, like the guys who like run up to the front of the shul and they always want to sit up front. I'm not talking about that stuff. I don't know in the girls' world how you like are a person who like runs after. I don't know how that works for you guys. But there's always the people that are trying to like earn people's respect. I'm talking about basic level of self-respect. I'm talking a very, it's a very important basic need of a human being. Every person needs to have self-respect and dignity and a basic amount of human dignity. The opposite of that, when a person does not have that, is called when a person feels shame. When a person does not feel dignified, that he loses his, he almost loses his humanity a little bit. Okay? Now, what is the source of honor and what is the source of shame? So the Mitzudas is telling you that David HaMelech says that my dignity, I want my dignity, Hashem, to praise you. What is he really referring to? He's referring to his soul. Because why does a person have self-respect? What do we respect about ourselves? What should others respect about us? Where do we draw our dignity and our honor from? Not from our bodies. Okay? It's nothing to be proud of. Okay? I'll explain why in a second. What we're proud of is our neshama, which comes from where? Where does our neshama come from? It comes from Hashem, but more specifically, the Sfarim use the words chatzuva, that it's drawn mitachas kisei hakavod. It comes from the kisei hakavod. The reason why a human being has dignity and self-respect is because of his soul, is because of his spirituality. That is our most basic pride, is that a person is a spiritual being, he's intellectual, he's emotional, he's growing all the abstract parts of us, all of our experience, everything that we are, that what we're proud of is who we are as a person. But the fact that we have a body is not something that we're proud of. In fact, that's a source of shame. And the Sfarim say, again, not shame as like, I'm embarrassed that I have it. I'm not talking about like, so embarrassed I have it. But it's not a place that we look for our pride. It's not something that when a person thinks about, oh, I am so dignified because of my materialism. A person should be ashamed that he shares these attributes with an animal. Chazal say, in fact, it's on your source sheet, that somebody who eats in public, the Gemara says, Ha'oichel b'shuk is doime lekelem. Someone who eats in public, right, he sits in the street corner eating a falafel. You ever like see those guys, like they're eating, they're dripping tchina down their arms while they wait for a traffic light? Doime lekelem, it's like a dog. Why? Right, and not only that, because I also say that you're pasul eidus, you cannot give testimony. Rashi says, Because since this person has no self-dignity, how can we trust such a person? We can't take his word in court. We can't trust somebody who has no self-dignity. He's not ashamed, Rashi says. This is somebody who has no self-respect. He'll say anything and do anything. He doesn't care. Because if somebody can eat, what is it? What are you doing when you eat in public? You're announcing, look, I have a body which needs maintenance. I need to fill my body with gasoline all the time. I need to fill it with fuel. So therefore, if a person eats in public, what he's saying is he's lost track of the most basic element of self-dignity, is that a person is his soul. A person is not his body. Okay? Our bodies are there to hold our souls. You know, I once read a book written by an author named Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. You guys all should find books written by Aryeh Kaplan and read them. Aryeh Kaplan died very, very young in the year 1983. He used to write a lot of books for NCSY. Now, the fact that he wrote for NCSY is not so relevant, but the reason why I write that is because he was a great Kabbalist and also a big scientist, but he has a tremendous, tremendous ability to also write things at a very simple level that even people without background can understand. And I personally, I found that it's so amazing because he really says really deep concepts in a very simple way. It's not a difficult read. And he has tons of, he was a very, very prolific author in Kabbalah, but also for, you know, on a very basic level. He has a book called If You Were God. Now, in that book, he has a little exercise where he asks you to point to yourself. Okay? So when you point to yourself, he says that most people, when they point to themselves, they go like this. Right? So he was there. His argument is that really what we should be doing is we should be going like this. That's his argument over there. But it got me thinking a little bit. When you think about yourself, when you think about what are you, who are you, what do you think? So I'm willing to postulate that most people in the world, unfortunately, they do not think of themselves as their mind and their soul and their emotions and their experiences. I'd like to think that when you talk about yourself, a lot of people make a mistake and they think about what they look like. And not just what they look like, what their, again, body, their physical, their material part, the part that you see. People are very caught up in the external part of themselves. It is a part of us, I'm not going to lie. But it's not the part of us that really defines us. And if we focus too much on that, what we really have to do is we have to be ashamed. Again, not ashamed like sad. We have our bodies, it is what it is. But we have to understand that animals also have a body, and the body needs maintenance. That's not our source of pride. Our source of dignity, our source of kavod, is from our soul that comes from the kisei hakavod. Okay? Now, that means that we have to look at ourselves and other people completely differently. It's a completely different outlook to start thinking about a person because you really have to get to know them. Now, there's a very interesting maral I'd also like to share with you. Who are we supposed to respect? Who do we give the most kavod to? So the Torah says, "V'hadarta pnei zaken." The ones who receive the most respect and the most dignity and the most honor from us are people who are older. And the Maral also points out that there's a very special mitzvah to give kavod hames. Why is there such a special mitzvah to give kavod hames? So the Maral says something very beautiful based on this idea. He says that because a person is always a balance of body and soul, and as we're saying, soul is kavod. Laman yizamercha kavod. That is the honor. When does a person deserve the most honor? When he has more soul and less body. The Maral says that as much as your balance of body and soul is more soul, a person deserves more, has more and more dignity, and deserves more and more honor and respect. Says the Maral that when a person gets older, what happens? Right? His body starts to, I don't know, break down, but it starts to fade. And what happens then? You become more spiritual. You're less into materialism. This is how it's supposed to be, by the way. Don't give me examples of people that went crazy when they got older. But in general, when people get older, their bodies function less, but their minds get better and better, right? There is obviously a certain point where that also slows down. But in general, when people get older, they're less caught up in materialism. Some of you might call that a midlife crisis. What happens is people become more spiritual. They realize that their time is fleeting. Their bodies naturally also begin to slow down, and therefore they become more spiritual. And when that happens, the Torah teaches us, V'hadarta p'nei zaken. Don't just honor them because they're older than you. The reason why we honor them is because they really deserve more dignity, because they are more spiritual. They have more soul. Their soul it really overwhelms their body at that stage. Until a person's final moments, and when his neshama leaves his guf, then what happens? Who are we honoring when we go to a levaya, chas v'shalom? When we go to a levaya and we honor the mace, we're not honoring the body, it's the opposite. We're giving a tremendous amount of kavod to the neshama. And the reason why everyone comes and there's such emphasis on Kavod HaMeis is because at that time, he's the most deserving of Kavod, the most deserving of respect. And the reason why is because when a person no longer has his guf, the guf being a source of, not a source of dignity, now it's time to give him the most Kavod that he deserves. So again, remember, as long as a person has body, there's always a little bit of shame. Okay, we're not ashamed of our bodies, that's not the point. The point is that the dignity that we draw, the way we're supposed to view ourselves as a dignified people, is because we have a neshama, which is taken from the Kisei HaKavod. Just one more point. There is one time a week where we have a special mitzvah to wear special clothing, and that, of course, is on Shabbos. The source to wear Shabbos clothing is, well, the Navi Yeshayo said the following. He says, "Zichti barato," a person should honor the Shabbos. So the Gemara says, well, there's many ways to honor the Shabbos. What does the Navi mean when he says honor? We can honor it in numerous ways. So the Navi, the Gemara says that when the Torah teaches us to honor the Shabbos, the Torah is actually telling us wear Shabbos clothing. So the Gemara says, wait a second, why? Why does honor always mean clothing? So the Gemara says, I'll prove it to you. Because Rabbi Yochanan, who was a great Talmudic sage, Rabbi Yochanan said, when Rabbi Yochanan used to call his clothing, what word did he use for his clothing? Another synonym for clothing? Not kavod, but he called it michabduse, which is Aramaic for kavod. Rabbi Yochanan would say, hey, pass me my kavod. I said, what are you talking about, Rabbi Yochanan? Why are you talking in riddles? He said, what are you talking about? Kavod is my coat. He called his jacket his kavod. Why is your clothing your kavod? The reason why your clothing is your kavod is because your clothing obscures what? What does your clothing cover? It covers your body. Okay? When a person shows off his body, again, this is not a Tzidkus class. Don't say that. Even for men, it's like that. When a person shows off his body, what he's doing is, he's saying, I am goof, I am physical, this is what I'm proud of, this is how I view myself. But when a person covers that over, puts on a big burqa, then what happens? What is he? Well, he's not a body, I don't even see that anymore. What he's accentuating when a person covers his body is that he is soul. He views himself as soul. That he exists even when his body is not seen. That means that this person is a person of dignity. So Rabbi Yochanan said, my clothing gives me dignity. Now why on Shabbos is there a special mitzvah to cover our bodies and to be more dignified with our soul? Because on Shabbos, what do we receive every Friday afternoon right before Shabbos? We get something called a neshama yisera, which means that we have extra soul. Shabbos is such a spiritual time that in order for us to be able to focus on that spirituality, what we do is we cover our bodies. Because again, there's always going to be this balance of body and soul. The body, material, the soul, the abstract, and the spiritual. And because on Shabbos we are supposed to be better connected to the spiritual, to the abstract world of neshama, so what we do is we cover our bodies on Shabbos with special Shabbos clothing, v'chibarato, and that's called honor for Shabbos. Because what we're really doing is we're honoring ourselves by obscuring our bodies and being more spiritual, by highlighting the fact that we are more neshama, that we are neshama yisera on Shabbos. This is Kavod Shabbos of wearing clothing. Okay? And that was Rabbi Yochanan. By the way, Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says, he was very, very good looking, he was very, very handsome. And Afal Pikin, Rabbi Yochanan, he himself said that my clothes is what honors me. He did not draw his kavod from his body, he drew his kavod from his soul. By the way, unfortunately, in the world today, obviously, these ideas are extremely, extremely foreign. People take a lot of pride in the way that they look, in their athletic feats, and things like this, which are not soul. But in truth, it's obviously not what we're here to be proud of. What we're here to be proud of is our experiences and our intellect and our emotions and all that stuff.
I mean, it's very easy for a good-looking person to say that. I mean, easier.
What do you mean?
Like, Rabbi Yochanan could say that, like, he's a soul because he's good looking, so it's much easier for him to see.
Why? It's the opposite, right?
No, it's true. No, you're right.
Why? I would say the opposite. Somebody who is good looking, they are always say, well, I deserve kavod because I'm good looking. Rabbi Yochanan, even in spite of his good looks, that's not what he took pride in. He said, my honor is in my soul. Clothing which covers me, that's what gives me honor. It's not my body. Again, he wasn't derived. Whether there is a terrible mistake someone could make is that through their clothes to try to find honor, right? Meaning by wearing clothing, which is like, you know, gaiva, and he wears fancy clothing, he walks around saying, oh, look how fancy, look how rich I am, look at me dropping the Gucci, the Fendi, the Prada. So that's not, he's not, that person is making a whole mistake because he thinks that clothing is the honor. It's the opposite. It's the covering of the body which is the honor only because it allows a person's soul to shine forth. You know what this is like? And I'm going to talk about this in a second a little bit. It's like if you have if you have like a clear bottle, so then you could see what's inside of it. But if you like make that bottle into something, like if you have like a, you know, like a soda bottle is always going to be clear because they want you to see what's inside of it, right? They want to see if there's anything in there and what it is, right? How can you tell if it's Coke or Sprite? But if you have a container which is not you can't see through, so then the container ends up taking an identity of its own, and then now you end up not seeing it. We can't let the physical part of us, which is just the container, become an entity in and of itself that it blocks what's inside. If you, as much as you see body and you think that the materialism is important, you're not going to be able to see your neshama. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan was able to cover that over and see through it or see beyond it, so then that means that Rabbi Yochanan was a man of soul. That was the honor. I think what you mean to say is that once you already have it, so then it's easy to play the game and say, oh, it's not important. But like, I think that's like a weird way of looking at it. I would say even in spite of the fact that he was so good looking, he still emphasized that real kavod comes from the soul. Okay, now there's a Mishnah in Avos which says the following. Okay, so we got the honor and the shame thing down. Body, soul, shame, honor. Okay, now the Mishnah in Avos says the following. Rebbe Omer, it's on the source sheet on side 2. Rebbe Omer, Al tistakel bekankan. Do not look at the container. Do not look at the barrel. Ella bima sheyeshbo. See what's inside of it. Now he says, yesh kankan chodosh mala yashon. You could have a new barrel with old wine. And he says, v'yashon shafilu chodosh eibo. You could have an old barrel which doesn't even have, and you could have an old barrel which doesn't even have new wine. I mean, his point is, like we were just saying, that everything has, whenever you have a vessel, you have a container with something inside of it, what's important is not what's external. What's important is to look within and to find the depth within that thing. Now Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe in the Mishnah, who said, Al tistakel bekankan, he was not telling you a lesson about wine. It was all a metaphor. What he was telling you is that when you come to judge a person, right, what do you judge a person for? Don't look at the kankan, don't look at the barrel, meaning what's holding it. Look inside, look within, and see what's in it. Sometimes you could have a barrel. Now, obviously, wine is better when it ages. So if you have a new barrel, you say, oh, this wine is no good, it's a new barrel. Maybe someone just put old wine in a new barrel. Why are you judging it? So how are you supposed to judge the wine? Taste it, right? In English, we have a saying, and it's the title of this year, it's called, don't judge a book by its cover. So how do you judge a book? Read it. Okay? You have to read the book. You have to actually get to know it to plunge into the depth. And then you could possibly understand it. Yes?
Let's say when you like look at a stranger, like how are you supposed to look at...
Okay, so that's an excellent point. Now, it's also very common, there's a very common refrain out there that says, don't judge people, right? Now, I don't think that's so fair because we always have to have ideas about things, right? You meet someone, what do you mean don't judge them? So what we really mean is don't judge them unfavorably. But of course, we're supposed to judge people. So how do you judge people? You have to get to know them. So what does that mean? And when you see a stranger, you got to get to know them. It's important to get to know people, to understand people. You can't judge people if you just see them. You can't see someone, and by the way, I'm not talking about only body and soul here, I'm talking about superficial and depth. Those are really the two words that I'm trying to put one against each other today, to compare to each other. It's possible to pass very, very superficial judgment if you do not get to know the person. You can say, oh, well, this person, he behaves like this. Well, did you get to know him? Did you hear his story? Did you read his story? If you read the book, you can judge the book. And most of the time, when you read the book, you'll judge it favorably. Because most people have good excuses for why they behave the way that they do. Most people, they grew up in a certain environment, with a certain background, not the way you saw things, not the way you're used to things. And their behavior is because of that. They've had experiences and challenges and successes that really shaped who they are. So when you get to know them, now you judge them favorably and you judge them appropriately. But if what you do is you just see them externally and you pass judgment very quickly, that's really just judging a book by its cover. It's judging the wine by the barrel. It's judging just the external. It's judging the goof. And that is not the way we're going to give each other honor. The way that we find honor is when we get to know people, who they are, and their experiences. I saw a very interesting social experiment. Someone sent me a video. The following thing actually brought this idea very clear to me. So there was a room full of people, a lot more people than this, probably like the whole school was there. And what happened? They had someone over the loudspeaker upstairs was looking down on all these people in the room. Now, in this room, I just want to describe to you a little bit of the kind of people that they had there. They had a little Chinese doctor with a white lab coat and big, thick glasses. That was one guy. Then there was another, standing next to him was a biker dude with tattoos and a long beard and all types of piercings. Next to him was a teenager holding a skateboard. Next to him was a middle-aged mom with her backpack. They had all types of people, a tremendous array of people, all different types of stereotypes. So they said in the video, the point of the social experiment is to break this group of people into various groups. So what would you say? Well, the guy with the skateboard probably belongs with the biker, and the mom probably belongs with the Chinese guy. And there was all different types of... When you just look at this group, you see a lot of different types of people. You would have broken it up into many different ways. But they said they made the following announcement. And I was taken aback by it. They said, anybody in this room who adopted a child, please go to the right of the room. And out of 100 people, 4 people went to the right of the room. The biker guy, the Chinese guy, and 2 other random people went to the right. Anybody in this room who grew up with a single parent, please go to the left side of the room. And 25 out of 100 people went to the left side of the room. And also a tremendous variety of people. And then they made another announcement. Anybody who had an autistic sibling, please go to the front of the room. And 3 people went to the front of the room. And they made other announcements. They kept doing this, and the room kept mixing. The room kept mixing. And what you start realizing is that if you have tattoos or you have a lab coat, okay? So what better defines you? Your tattoo or your lab coat? Or the fact that you adopted a child? Now think about what that means to adopt a child. I hope I'm being sensitive to everybody in the room. Adopting a child is a tremendous thing. To take a child that's not yours and to treat them like your own. Think about what kind of person, what kind of emotional fortitude, and what kind of a tremendously kind person would do such a thing. Okay? It probably says a lot about you if you're willing to go that far to adopt a child, right? Now, what says more about you? The fact that you adopted a child or the fact that you have a piercing? Probably the fact that you adopted a child, right? What says more about you? Your pocket protector and your lab coat? Or that you adopted a child? So when you think about it, that biker, right? The guy from the from Hell's Angels and Dr. David Day, or whatever his name is, they had a lot more in common than you thought. When you saw this video, you're like, whoa, these two guys probably will never say a word to each other, but the truth is, based on their life experiences and the people that they were, and the strong and emotionally giving people that they were, these people probably had more in common than anybody else in the room. Okay? And the lesson of this social experiment was, as it went on, is that you really can't judge people until you get to know their story. Now, most people don't walk around in the street saying, hey, I adopted a child. Hello, my brother is autistic. Or, I grew up with a single mom. People don't do that. What they do is they express themselves in silly ways. Unfortunately, I have no problem with the piercing and all that stuff for the pocket protector. But the point is that people try to express themselves. And people try to show that there's something, but not always is that their story. And you can't rely on the way people want to express themselves. What you really need to do is get to know them. So your question is, how am I supposed to get to know people? If I want to judge them, like, how am I supposed to know? The answer is, it's a lot of work getting to meet people and to be friendly to people and to gaining people's trust and to getting them to tell their story and getting to learn them. And a person should not be judging people superficially by a few encounters. That's the point. The people that we really get to know, those are the people that we understand, and those are the people that we can properly respect.
I'm saying, it's very, if it's like a stranger and you're not going to get to know them, you shouldn't be judging them at all.
I mean, it's better not to. Why would you judge them? I mean, you're going to have certain ideas, but just remember that anything that you think is going to be extremely shallow, because it's impossible to judge somebody based and give them proper respect based on seeing them superficially and just seeing their bodies. Because you have to really get to know who they are, their soul, their emotions, their challenges, and their experiences in order to properly get to know someone.
What about if you're like automatically, if I see like a person, like, you know, those ladies that wear like the full burqas, like, mm-hmm. I automatically place them in a group of people.
I think you should understand that they have an entire life, and these people are probably very good parents and very good friends, and they have a certain way of doing things. I don't know why anyone would pass judgment. I don't know why you would pass judgment. Why? I mean, it's fun to like read the Mishpacha magazine
like
about it.
It's an actual thing, though. Like, you can't help it.
Okay. So again, like I said, you could have like these babies, but remember, I'm not telling you to be malachim overnight. But what I am telling you is that remember that the way that you're judging them, you don't really know them. So don't think that what you're thinking actually is true. It's just like, okay, obviously, again, like I said, like, you know, you saw the story about these people and everyone said they're so crazy. But again, to really judge a person, You have no idea who they are. You have no idea what they've been through and what their challenges are. So it's really hard to judge them. Okay, let's move on because we're running out of time. Okay, now, Rabbi Akiva's students. Why were Rabbi Akiva's students punished? What did they do wrong? So the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva's students, loy nohagu kavod zelazeh. Now, so loy nohagu kavod zelazeh means they did not show each other proper respect. Now, what's implied here is, and again, remember, when we're talking about Rabbi Akiva's students, Rabbi Akiva's students were not regular people, okay? We're regular people, at best. Rabbi Akiva's students were great, great people. Now, being great, great people means that it's hard for us to understand their shortcomings and their averas. We're not judging them. We don't know them well enough to judge them. But what we could say about it is, if the source of honor is a person's soul, that means that if I want to see dignity in you, and if I want to bring out self-respect in you, I need to see you as a person, as a soul. Al tistakil b'kankan, el b'mashe yeshbo. Perhaps Rabbi Akiva's mistake, his Talmidim's mistake was that they did not properly get to know each other and appreciate each other for their depth of character and personality. Instead, they passed superficial judgment upon each other, and that caused them to fall short of kavod. Now, I'll tell you why this overlaps very nicely with it fits appropriately with the Tkufa of Sfiras HaOmer. Okay? What is so special about the Torah? Why do we anticipate the Torah so much? We're on the countdown to Shavuos. Moshe Rabbeinu told us we're getting the Torah. We took out our calendars and we started crossing off days. What is so special about the Torah? Is the Torah just another book of laws and lessons? Is that what the Torah is? So the Maral of Prague, I'm not going to read it inside, but this is maybe the most beautiful five lines in all of the Maral. He explains what the beauty of Torah is, and he explains what the beauty of a person is. And he says it's the same thing. The beauty of the Torah is not what happens if an ox gores a person, or what's the law if somebody swears falsely in court that he has to pay an extra fifth. It's not the basic laws. The beauty of the Torah is that the Torah is connecting us to a world of depth and meaning, which is way deeper than our material existence. That is the beauty of Torah. If you look at Torah as just a little guidebook and how we can get along with each other with a few lessons on how to behave, you're missing the entire point of the Torah. That is an extremely superficial look on what the Torah is. That's not what the Torah is. The Torah is much more. The Torah connects us to a spiritual realm. It connects us to Hashem. We have to find the depth in the Torah. It's important to understand that on a simple level, but we always have to have in the back of our mind that this Torah that we're receiving is not just another way of running the world, not just another way of teaching us ethics. The Torah is a book of depth. The Maral laments the fact that, unfortunately, people lost sight of that. And people were bothered. Hey, why are you guys spending time sitting and learning? Why are you guys sitting and learning in Kol all about what happens if a donkey falls into a pit holding someone else's vessel? That's really what you're sitting, spending your time doing? The Maral says because people lost track of the fact that the Torah is not just a book of laws. All of those laws, it's Hashem's will, and by learning it and understanding it and internalizing it, we're connecting ourselves to Hashem's intellect, and we are creating for ourselves depth by plunging into the depths of the Torah. And the Maral says very beautifully, he says, these same people wonder, what's so special about people? We're the same as animals. The Maral says, the same thing that happened to the Torah happened to man. People forgot that there's depth in the Torah. They viewed the Torah very superficially. The Maral says, the same thing is true with people. They stopped viewing themselves with depth. They started viewing themselves superficially. People wanted to know, what's so special about me? So the Maral says, you know what's special about you? You were created in the image of Hashem. You have a neshama. People lost respect for the Torah and for each other, the Maral says, because they failed to see the spiritual depth, the emotional depth, all the depth. Al tistakel b'kankan. Do not get caught up on the vessel. The vessel, harei ani kekli, molei busha uchlima. The vessel is always shame. Again, it's just not dignity. It's not dignified. There's nothing to be proud of in the vessel. The vessel, we throw it away, is disposable. What we have to be proud of is our depth. It's our personality. It's our character. It's our neshama. L'mayin z'mercha kavod. Kavod, tzelem elokim. They come from our neshama, and that is our source of pride. Now, that's why these two times, Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, during the time of Sfiras HaOmer, when we count down, we're overjoyed to receive the Torah, which is full of depth. Because Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim failed to find depth in each other, it was dafka in this tkufa, dafka in this period of time, between Pesach and Shavuos, they were punished. because this was supposed to be a time of anticipating the death of the Torah, and because Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim made a mistake and they viewed things superficially, therefore they were specifically punished during this time. There was one day though, during Sefiras Omer, that tremendous death is revealed. And that of course is which day? Lag BaOmer. Because on Lag BaOmer, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai taught us, he passed away, but he also taught us the tremendous secrets of the Torah that is captured in the book of the Zohar. And therefore the Zohar really is the background. It really shows us and teaches us the Kabbalah, which is the depth of the Torah. It's the meaning of the Torah. It shows us how all the intricate ways of the Torah, how we connect to Hashem. And therefore on Lag BaOmer is a day of tremendous depth. That's where we stop seeing things superficially and we start seeing things for their meaning and for their death and what they really are. And therefore, Lag BaOmer, Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim stopped dying because their mistake of not viewing things for death, and Lag BaOmer, everything was fixed because Lag BaOmer is a day of tremendous, tremendous giloy of revealing the depths. By the way, the fact that the mon fell on Lag BaOmer, I was just thinking maybe on the way to this morning, perhaps the reason why the mon also fell on that time is because normally, right, when a person sees food, what do you think about food? Food, it's like, oh, I get to eat now, my body, right? I get to, it could be a very superficial view, a material view on food. But when a person eats mun, of course, was from Shemayim. Everybody who ate mun, there was no waste when they ate mun. They didn't need to go to the bathroom or anything. Mun was a spiritual food. Mun really showed them that the way that a person should view food is only for the spirituality in it. We only want to draw spirituality out of things, not get caught up in these superficial, external, surface parts of things. So this was the idea of Sefiras Omer, and also the idea of Lag BaOmer. And I had a Mashkiach once who once taught us the following. He said, you know, when you go to the Kotel, what do? You're in reverence, right? You're in awe of the Kotel. You walk in, then you like backpedal like all the way back up to the bagel store because you don't want to turn your back on the Kotel. What's so special about the Kotel? Isn't there, don't we have stone walls? You go outside this building, you'll see all the buildings in Yerushalayim are made out of Jerusalem stone. Why do we see the Kotel with so much holiness? It's just a stone. Because it has depth. So why do we see it that way? Because we were used to it. We understand the Me'olam Le'zaza Shechina Mikaisa Ma'aravi. Okay? He used to say, also, you know, when our tefillin straps fall on the floor, everyone runs to pick up the tefillin straps. But your belt, which I'm not wearing now, if it falls on the floor, no big deal, it's just a belt, right? What's the difference between your belt and your tefillin? It's just leather. It's just cowhide. What's the difference? The answer is that you've trained yourself to understand that one of them is just a belt, it's just leather, but the other one, it's a vessel. It holds spirituality. The Kotel holds spirituality. Our belts hold spirituality. We have to get used to viewing ourselves differently. If we want true self-respect, true dignity, we have to view ourselves differently. When you think about yourself, don't think about, oh, thinking about myself means I am 5'11 with brown hair and hazel eyes. That is not who you are. That is your body. That is just the vessel. It's like if you ask the company of Coke, what do they make? If you ask the Coca-Cola company, what do you make? And they would say, oh, we make plastic bottles. No, you don't. You make Coca-Cola. It fills the bottles. We have to view ourselves for our souls. That means you have to think about for yourself, who are you? What have you experienced? What challenges have you overcome? Are you a good person? Did you learn? Are you intellectual? Do you pray? Are you connected to Hashem? These are the ways that we have to define ourselves. By the way, the most important thing, of course, is not how we view ourselves, but really how we view others. It's an important step to viewing others properly, because when we get used to seeing things not for their surface, not superficially, we'll get used to viewing other people, and we'll see our friends not as bodies, not as physical things, not as the vessel, not as materialistic. We'll start seeing people for who they are. And of course, that's only possible if you get to know them, because you cannot judge a book by its cover. You can only judge a book by reading the entire thing and reviewing it and really getting to know it. And it takes a lot of empathy and a lot of understanding and a lot of self-confidence to be able to get to know people and then not be afraid to hear their story and to think about why they are the way that they are and think about who they are and to appreciate them. And if we do that properly, we will all show each other proper dignity. We'll be noye kovah zeh lazeh. We will rectify the sin of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, and we can anticipate the Torah with true joy like we're supposed to. Everyone have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you.